We have some advice for you now for your personal computer use. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. Larry Mueller here. Really happy to have you listening in as we visit with Pete about what's going on in the world of PCs. And certainly take your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
And, you know, we got the holiday season. Boy, there was a lot of people out shopping. Today
is a lot of those flyers to get them in the stores. You know, a lot of advertisement.
And today is, of course, is the big sort of Black Monday. I don't know if they call it Black Monday or whatever, but it's
people shopping at work.
online shopping today. But what about
make sure you know how to minimize that browser window for your supervisor coming in looking over your shoulder.
Oh, man. Well, what about deals on computers out there? I think there are probably some opportunities.
Boy, you know, I look through all the flyers and, you know, I get emails from buy.com and CompUSA.com. Of course, you know, last year CompUSA had stores.
Yeah.
And they've closed up. I don't know if they've closed up every single one, but, you know, they still exist online. And, you know, 19-inch monitors I saw over the Thanksgiving holiday sales going for about $100.
Yeah.
You know, chairs, furniture, you know, less than half price, $50 for leather reclining seat, you know, leather office seats. The PCs, laptops, $300, $400, $500 for, you know, laptops. You know, the certain things to look for to me, the wireless and a lot of the ones that are under $500, you have to be, to me, be careful. I'd prefer to have a wireless N, which gives you a little bit stronger signal strength, but the routers, you know, they're getting better. So, but again, wireless N is a good standard to look for. Monitor size, you know, 15.4, 17 inch. But if you read the fine print, you know, they say, you know, limit of 3 per store or no rain checks and things like that. So, you know, I couldn't see myself getting up at 5 o'clock or probably earlier because, you know, people are waiting outside even before then. And, of course, they had, you know, an accident situation where in Walmart, I think it was in New York where, you know.
Somebody was killed.
Yeah, someone was trampled when they opened up the doors. So I kind of stay away from that. But, you know, there'll be more deals coming up. You know, it's not like today or yesterday or the day before was the day. There were $99 19-inch monitors 2 years ago, so. But what's nice to see is that overall the price keeps decreasing. Things keep getting better. Things keep getting faster. More gadgets. Key thing to see is that, you know, the digital cameras, the pixels keep getting bigger and bigger. And what does that mean? More hard drive space.
Yeah.
So secondary storage for USB or FireWire hookups. You know, 500 is kind of like almost like the starting point. You see 750 gigabytes and 1 terabyte, and those can also be used for adding to DVRs, digital video recorders,
right,
that people are using for additional storage. And those come down under $100. So it's
there's some good possibilities out there.
Yep.
Well, our lines are all filled, so let's go to Rosie first in Woodruff. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Peter.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My quick question is about SpyBot and what it is doing while it is running. I wanted to ask Peter, on the bottom of the screen when it says running bot check and it has the two sets of numbers, one of them, of course, is flipping slash, the second set of numbers of the number of files or bytes or whatever. The next line will have program names. What I'm wondering is, if you see a file name there, does that mean that SpyBot is in the middle of scanning that, or does that have more to do with what is in the SpyBot library that they're looking for?
What goes on with programs like SpyBot is they basically have if you want to call it their own database or list of what they would consider malware, spyware, Trojans, anything that would be considered bad for your system. They have this list, and they constantly go through the list and, you know, basically checking it off that they compared, you know, your system with their list, and they weren't able to locate anything, so they're moving on to the next item. And I remember when SpyBot first came out, it had, you know, under 10,000, and I don't even know the number, the upper limit on the number of programs that they're looking for, but my guess is it's probably got to be in the neighborhood of somewhere around 100,000 by now.
It's actually 344,000.
Yeah, so
and that was part of my question was I'm having a problem with Virtumond and Vundo.
Okay.
Which, having done quite a bit of research, I realize now that it's extremely difficult to get off because it's replicating itself and hiding and so forth.
Sure.
And that is, my SpyBot normally would take half an hour, 40 minutes to run.
Okay.
When it gets to the Virtumond.dll, it's hanging and hanging and just barely moving. And it does take about 2 hours to complete, or more than 2 hours to complete the running of the SpyBot. But when it's done, it says, congratulations, no problems found.
Okay.
And I thought, well, okay.
Is your system running slow?
You know, yes.
Okay.
And I have done, just to say, I have done, you know, malicious software tool, my AVG shows that there's no virus or Trojans or whatever, and I've gone to Wiki Security and looked for these Vundo fixes and so forth, so I feel like it's not there. And I did just totally get rid of a bunch of stuff, Java and Real Player, all kinds of stuff. I know I listen to you regularly, so I know about changing the recycling bin down to 1% and those sorts of things.
Okay, all right.
And well, that did seem to help. But when I do run SpyBot, I'm still seeing that Virtumond, and I thought my assumption meant that I had it.
Okay.
But what you're saying is that really those names are in their library.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, if I could just ask that real quick. When you are doing those scans, if you had a situation where your computer crashed and you had to rebuild the operating system, yada, 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 it was fine. But there are two operating systems on my computer. When you run a scan, like AVG or Avast or whatever, it is doing the whole computer regardless of what is on there. I thought, is something hiding in that other operating system?
No, it'll go through the entire... You know, which other operating system do you have?
Well, it is Windows XP.
Okay.
But I had a crash system where I could not access System Restore, and Microsoft just said, forget about it, let's just reload everything and call it a different name.
Okay, so...
And did not go back and get the other one off of there. So when I do and do duplicate files, there's a kajillion of them in there, and I don't know which ones are...
So in other words, when you did a reinstall, you install it into a different folder?
Correct.
Okay.
Which is not a problem. And I mean, 75% of my computer is free space, so it's not like, you know...
Okay.
Not a big deal.
One of the things that I would do is, do you know how to bring up your computer in safe mode?
Yes, sir.
Have you tried running the scans in safe mode?
Yes, I did all of that.
Okay, all right.
And it all comes up with, you know, A-OK.
Okay.
So I'm pretty clear that that's off of there, but...
How about things running in your system tray over in the lower right-hand side? Do you have a lot of things running there?
No.
A lot of icons or anything?
Mm-mm. Keep it to a real minimum. So
where do you see the decrease in, you know, when you say it's running slower, where do you see the speed issues?
It's not consistent, and it has been getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, if you're trying to run, I should first off say I'm on dial-up, so, you know, that's the answer to your question, I believe.
Okay. All right.
I don't have high speed available. I don't run multiple programs or, you know, anything like that. I think it's just, I know that when I updated Java the last time, that's when I did have trouble updating it, and that's when I started noticing things getting very, very pokey.
Okay. Well, you may want to try and see when things are amiss, that also slows down the system. And if you're experiencing slowdowns, you know, with the web and being online and especially having a dial-up, what's going on is the computer is trying to make requests multiple times to accomplish, you know, some simple tasks. And if you don't have things, technically installed properly or there's something amiss, what that tells me is probably to uninstall it or, install over it and try and, you know, do it again to get it to work so it works properly.
Yeah, so just reinstall.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks, Rosie, for calling. Appreciate it.
Sounds like she was doing all the right things. And she's a student of the show.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's see. We've got Mary in Columbus up next. Mary, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
You've gone from someone who has a lot of knowledge that was asking you a question to someone you have to gear yourself down a lot more simply for me.
Okay.
We're okay.
I've been at one of the big box stores and noticed these net books, and I thought it would be fun to have a couple of those for my investment club when we meet, because there is internet access. And my question is, what are some of the advantages and disadvantages, aside from I know you can't store things on it, but what kinds of software can I load onto these netbooks, and what is good price to pay for them, and where are the best places to buy them?
Okay.
On the internet or in the local stores?
Those are good questions. Let's see if I can help steer you in the right place. Do you have access to a computer?
Sure.
Okay. What I would probably do, I haven't looked personally at any of these netbooks, but I've always been intrigued by, you know, net-enabled devices.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's usually size-wise, they're, you know, convenient to have around. And, you know, they should be fairly easy, you know, to work with and navigate. The drawbacks that they may have is, like, one of the questions you asked is software, what's available to actually run on them. The other question may be, you know, how easy are they to keep up to date or current? Because, you know, technology changes, software changes, browsers change, and so forth. So with that being said, and also the question related to, you know, where's the best place to buy them? You know, where can you get a good price on them in terms of getting them fixed and things like that? You know, the serviceability of them. One place to look for reviews, or actually there's a couple places that I like to use, is cnet.com, CNET.com. And what I would do is type in netbooks, and if you know the manufacturer, that helps, you know, putting that in the line, because that'll, you know, simplify the search result. The other place is called ePinions. We've talked about this on the show, where other people that have actually used the product, you know, post their, you know, reviews and how they think about them.
Okay.
And they also have some links to some places that may have them available for purchasing online. And then also look and see if, I'd say, you know, places like buy.com and CompUSA, see if they carry them. Some of the users there also post reviews, which is nice. So CNET is sort of like, you know, they're technology writers and they get their hands on the unit and they review it and say, hey, this is good, this is bad, or they compare it to other devices that are out there. Versus ePinions doesn't really compare it to other devices. It's more of user input and someone else like you or I saying, hey, we've used this and this is how I think it, you know, works for me and maybe compares to something else that I was trying. And then, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to find the best price, there are price shoppers out there where I believe MySimon.com used to be a popular one. PriceGrabber.com is another one. And, you know, you could probably type in, Gadget Shopper or Computer Shopper and see, you know, what other results you might get out there.
Okay.
How do you know how well the reviewers are? They might be just people calling from the computer company and typing in the review.
Well, actually, CNET.com is a company that is independent of the manufacturers. Okay. So those are technology people that are going to be doing those kind of reviews. There's actually I have a top 10 pick that's webbuyersguide.com that are independent reviewers. You know, they work for, you know, like magazine mm-hmm. companies and things like that. So those are the tech people. The people from like ePinions and the computer stores, those are typically the shoppers.
Yeah,
the people that are buying into it and saying, hey, I checked this out and, you know, I'm giving it 4 out of 5 stars. Or there might be 100 people that bought it and the average review is like 3.8 out of 4 or it might be 1.8 out of 4. So that gives you a better and usually what they say, their opinions are usually more towards, you know, I used it, had it for a month, it broke, I took it back, you know, I had to get it exchanged, they gave me another one, it, you know. So those are the kind of feedback you get from those sites.
My wife goes to ePinions a lot.
Yeah, so you're getting two sites. One is person picking it apart and saying, hey, you know, if you're looking for this, it's got it. And the other part says, in the real world, you know, I had 5 of them and I've had enough. So, you know, so I'm giving you the full spectrum of places to get opinions on a product.
And thanks very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers with Peter Green of InfoStar. Pete, you wanted to make one final comment on Mary's...
Well, not just Mary's, but, you know, in past experience, and because I like to play around with technology, just not with computers, but home theaters and things like that. You know, I had to make some decisions on buying audio-video receivers, computer projectors, wiring, and things like that. And my point is that there are forums out there that websites put up, and there are also news groups. And on my Virus Info Center page, on the very top part of that, I have forums where they're all one-click accessible. And it's kind of, you know, if you use Google, you can search through their groups that they link to. So that's a good resource, excuse me, to check for news groups and discussions. But a lot of the forums that I have listed, they're kind of hard to get in search results. So it's a little bit more effort to go to those forums individually, but you're going to get a lot more pointed results in terms of, you know, exactly what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I try to convince one of the web companies to build a search related to that, and they're like, well, that's going to cost you $5,000. And I'm like, you don't understand. Why am I paying for this? I'm trying to offer you a suggestion to get better results for people. And, you know, the two sides didn't match up on that. But my point is that there are news groups and online forums that are hosted by sites that share a wealth of opinions and trial and errors on using different products. You know, if you're into gaming, if you're into high-def movies, you know, and understanding 1080p versus 1080i and, you know, throw distances on projection screens. And, you know, there's all this stuff that's out there. You just have to, you know, go to the right sources.
Jessica emailed us from Madison. She's a new laptop owner, 1.5 years or so. She has a question about antivirus software. Do I have to get new software when mine expires? This may seem like a stupid question, but I'm too embarrassed to ask my friends. Also, what kind of software would you recommend for a student who needs good protection from viruses but is on a limited budget?
Okay. Oh, great question. All the laptops usually ship with a product, typically Norton, McAfee. There's an incentive for them because once the user signs up and pays for it, there's usually a kickback that goes back to the software manufacturer. What I usually do is tell people, you know, it's okay to have not just one, but 2 antivirus programs on it. There are a number of free ones out there. I link to them on the InfoStar Virus Info Center page. If you go to AV Links, There are links there for BitD, which is my abbreviation for Bitdefender. There's AVG, Avast. ClamWin is a free internet project. The only drawback with that is they notify you that there's an update to the software, but you have to go and download it. Products like AVG and Afast, Bitdefender, push it to you. So the ClamWin uses a pull technology where you have to go and pull it off of the site. Those are all free. The transition, though, is the key thing. When you uninstall something like a commercial product like Norton, McAfee, and some of the others, you need to make sure it's complete and thorough. So usually you want to go through the control panel, add remove programs, or they may have an uninstall link from the program selection. So you need to check where the uninstall is. You may even want to do a little research online and see if there are some uninstall tips. Sometimes you need to put the system in a safe mode to uninstall it. But be prepared by having the other programs to install, you know, beforehand.
You're right.
So after you do the uninstall, then you want to do the install
right
of the
away.
Other programs right away. Then you go online and you check for updates and make sure the virus definitions are current and the software is current, and then you should be all set.
All right. Paul, let's go to you next in Madison. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
My problem is slow internet connection, that is going from website to website. I have a DSL through AT&T right now. Some years ago, I had a cable connection. It was instantaneous. Now it takes an extremely long time. In fact, it's gotten longer over the few years we've had the program. I've looked on some of the websites about tuning computer, and they say you might get a 10 or 20% increase. But I need something like several hundred percent to be even reasonable.
Wow.
Any ideas?
How old is the computer system that you have?
Well, this one, we have two.
Okay.
My wife's laptop is 2.5 years old, and it has 1 gig of RAM.
Okay.
The desktop system I have is maybe 6 or 7 years old. It has a 1.8 gigahertz processor and less than a gig of RAM, 784.
Okay.
Meg.
All right.
One of the things that's happened over the years is they keep pushing the web technology, to utilize more and more computer resources. Bumping up the memory would probably help in your desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's possible with the age of it. Memory is still fairly inexpensive, so that might be, something to look at. One of the things I didn't mention in terms of people buying new systems with laptops and running Vista, I'm almost inclined, three is a minimum, probably four if you can, go there. Desktop systems, probably, almost the same thing. They usually start at two, but, four, just the way they keep pushing it. In terms of trying to increase the speed, that's one thing to do. The other thing is, do you have a lot of tasks running on your system?
How would I know?
In the lower right-hand corner, they call that the system tray. There would be icons open or pictured. You might have like two computers next to each other. That's for your internet connection or your network. You might have another one for your antivirus.
Got those.
If you got AOL, Instant Messenger, you might have one for that. If
Don't
you have
that.
Windows Messenger, you might have one for that. If you've got sometimes when you install Adobe Viewer or other programs, they might, put an icon there. So if you have, I'd say probably more than, Windows Defender puts an icon there. If you had maybe more than four, then you might want to take a look at the configuration of your startup. to minimize, to get rid of those because they're typically not used. So do you have any idea how many of those you have?
Well, I have seven or eight. I have one. I'll tell you what I have real quickly. One is for the Norton Internet Security, or okay. antivirus. One right. is for the AT&T's antivirus.
Okay.
Which are essentially, that's just an expansion of the Norton. I got Norton mm-hmm. for AT&T.
Yep.
One is a safe hardware removal. One is the printer. One is a camera program.
Mm-hmm.
Then the two computers, and then the power chute for my backup.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Dell Support Center, volume, that's it. Some mm-hmm. of those seem to be just benign. Are any of those...
The printer one you don't need, the camera one you don't need, the Dell Support one you don't need, the power chute, maybe or maybe not. You have to try and see if it works with it, without it being there. So you probably... What you do... Are you using Windows XP?
Yes.
Okay, what you do is you click on Start.
Start.
Then Run, and then type in MSCONFIG and hit Enter. And then you go to the Startup tab. And what you have to do is look through the checkboxes, the ones that are checked, and see if you can identify them as related to the programs that you told me about. The printer, if it's in, like for HP, you might see some HP stuff there. You can take that out. Same thing with the camera. So try to identify them. One of the things you want to make sure that you do before you start unchecking them is almost write, is what you should really do is write down what you have with them checked, the check in the checkbox. And then you're going to uncheck them. And, you need to mark that down so to keep track and see what combination works.
Uh-huh.
But what's going on is your computer resources are being used up by all of those little icons just being on standby, ready for when they need to be used, and they're just kind of slicing the computer's power away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So
work on that.
Yeah, so that'll keep you busy for a while trying to work on that. And then what you might want to consider doing is trying some of the slimmer browsers that are out there. Like Google's Chrome is, to me, is faster. Might take you a little bit getting used to, but it's not a bad idea having another browser other than just Internet Explorer. And if you go to type in Google and then Chrome, Chrome, that might help, with the speed as well.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Email from Dean in Marshfield. I received a frantic email from a reasonably reliable friend about a virus. I quoted the main part of the message below. These alerts are often bogus. Any truth to this one? And here's what it says. You should be alert during the next few days. Do not open any message with an attachment entitled Postcard from Hallmark. Regardless of who sent it to you, it's a virus. It opens a postcard image that burns the whole hard disk C of your computer.
Well, I haven't heard of that one, but I can
tell
you.
I got that one too.
Okay. There's a website called Snopes, and I link to virus. There's virus searches and also hoaxes that I have links to off of the InfoStar Virus Info Center page. There are hoax busters and Snopes and folklore and warnings. So those are all resources that you can actually, do some searches for. But, a word of caution is, getting emails from people you know and them having attachments, you have to be careful because you're in their address book. And if they have an infection and then emails are being sent to you, you just have to really be careful with it. So... I usually don't open them up, and having an antivirus on your system and it's scanning your incoming email typically offers protection, but it's not 100%, because if there's something out there that isn't dealt with by your antivirus software, then and they don't have it in their database and you didn't update it. So, if you, I haven't updated in 3 days, or you get this, I haven't updated in a week. Well, the problem is a lot's happened in a week. Yeah. And remember the earlier caller we had where, you know, she said SpyBot's got over 300,000 and I guessed at 100,000. Well, boy, was I way off. So, you know, how fast does that multiply in the course of, you know, 3 days, 7 days, and so forth? So make sure you keep your antivirus up to date. And if it looks suspicious, it is suspicious.
Yeah. Ross in Dallas, Wisconsin is up next. Ross, hello.
Hello. I've been updating Windows since like 3.2, and every time it comes out, it doesn't seem like it's complete when it comes out, and I haven't heard anything good about Vista. Problem is, I need a new laptop, and I wonder what the best way to go about getting a laptop without Vista on it is.
Oh, boy. I'm not a fan of Vista. I've talked about that before, and you know the Apple commercials, the reason they're funny is because they're true. The only issue is, you know, the Apple products are definitely more expensive.
Yeah.
And they're more attractive, you know, to finding a new home if you know you're not watchful with them. With that being said, I don't know how technically inclined are, but one of the things that I look at is, okay, can I get Windows XP on a new laptop, and how do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
One is to ask the manufacturer if that's possible. So find a model that you're interested in and see if you can actually order it with Windows XP, because I think it's just a more stable, easier to use operating system than Vista. It doesn't have certain layers of what they consider security or protectionism to, you know, make it a better operating system. And see if you can get it, you know, delivered that way. So that's one option. And how do you do that? Well, you have to contact, you know, the manufacturers through, you know, like Dell would be one, HP, which also owns Compaq, Gateway, and go to their sites. Acer is another one, and see if those are, you know, options available to you. The other one is to research the model, and, you know, you'd have to do it yourself, which means you would have to get a copy of Windows XP. I would consider the professional version over the home edition. Media Center might be an attractive alternative, but you would then have to take the model of the computer and go to the website of the manufacturer and see if the drivers are available for what's in that laptop, i.e. the wireless network adapter, the video adapter, you know, any of the devices that are in that computer. You would need the device drivers for the Windows XP operating system that you would choose. So that's how I would do it. And I actually had to do that for my, I think we talked about that on the air. My son's system had a Vista update, and I redid it with Windows XP and discovered that there was actually a problem with the CPU, that they had a software fix, but if it didn't work, we were giving you an extra year to send the unit back and we'll replace it. So fortunately it did work because he hasn't complained to me. But I did redo it in XP.
All right. Good luck, Ross. Thanks for calling.
So hopefully that helped.
Yeah. Veronica in Madison, your turn. Hi, Veronica.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
I am calling about my Windows software. I have Windows IE, and every time I open it, I get a message saying, the message says, cannot find file. Hello?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It says, it says, cannot find file, and there's three backslashes, C program, something that looks like a percentage sign, 20 files, AOL, 20 files, toolbar. I think what happened is I installed an AOL AOL, what do you call that?
Their software
browser,
to go online?
Yeah, I installed AOL software, AOL Explorer, and it had a toolbar option, and I did not choose that option.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I've done that, I have tried uninstalling AOL. I've gone to the default functions for IE, and it still goes back to this error message.
Okay.
And it says, make sure the path or internet address is correct.
Which version of Windows do you have? Do you know?
I have Vista.
You have Vista. Okay. What I would probably do, can you get on the internet at all?
Yeah, I get on the internet, but what I usually have to do is, when I open the Internet Explorer, it gives me that error message.
Right.
And then I have to go to the little icon for my home pages, and that's how I get on the internet.
Okay.
Or I just have to type her address directly in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you open the Internet Explorer, usually opens on your home page. That doesn't happen with me. It doesn't open on my home page. It opens on this AOL toolbar.
Oh, okay. What you need to do is, if you go to one of the options in your browser, is I believe across the top, you need to look for tools, and then internet options, and look where your home page is set up, and
I fixed that. I have set my home page up to be Google.
Uh huh.
And I have three different homepage tabs set in there, and still it does not go to any of them.
Uh-huh.
It goes to this program file.
Okay.
It looks like a file in my C drive.
Okay. All right, so I'm glad you looked at that. What I would do then is, if you go to, you could probably do a Google search on it, or you could go to Microsoft.com and search their site. But what I would do is look for getting the latest version of Internet Explorer and downloading and updating your system for Vista, you know, for your operating system. Probably what happened is there were some files that were either shared or was overwritten with the AOL settings, and it's not cooperating with what you have. So if you bring your Internet Explorer current for your operating system, it will probably overwrite and fix that.
Mm.
The other thing I would recommend is probably have another browser on your computer. You might want to look at Firefox. If you go to Mozilla, MOZILLA.com, or if you typed in Firefox, you'd probably find it too.
Yeah.
And like I said, Google's Chrome is another good one to look at. It's a little different, but it's slimmer, and I think it's faster. So, but it's a good idea to have another alternative browser on your system.
And good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers with Peter Green of InfoStar. Let's go to Michael in New Berlin next. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks. I really like 20 Arts Easy Cleaner, but it doesn't work with Vista. And I want to find something that would be a good registry cleaner with Vista. And I also want your opinion on whether or not Vista is basically the ME or Windows ME of our age. Thank you.
You know, I liked ME. It wasn't too bad, but it was when, you know, it was a stepping stone, you know, for Windows, an evolution. The only thing is, when they evolved Vista, you know, I think they went in the wrong direction. So, you know, you could be right. You know, in terms of finding a registry cleaner, there are some good sites out there to do some research. And again, this becomes more user opinion, even though it's a CNET site. If you go to, I believe it's download.com, is owned by CNET, and typically you'll have user opinion in terms of, you know, a yay or a nay, you know, whether or not people have found the software, you know, useful. And you'll also see the number of downloads, you know, in other words, you know, like the peer-to-peer networking sharing files is really popular. So if you went to, like, LimeWire search on download.com, you might see, like, you know, 50 million downloads. But, you know, if you did a search on Registry Cleaner, you might find some products that had, you know, like 1,200 downloads. You know, I'm just giving you a kind of a range of of, you know, how they keep track of things. So those are have user opinions there, as well as descriptions of what the products do and if there are free versions and then, you know, for fee versions. So that's a good place to check. Simtel is another one, SIMTEL.com. Two Cows, I believe it's TUCOWS.com. There are a bunch of software shareware sites out there that host the files for downloading from multiple servers, so it makes it a lot faster to gain access to it. Sometimes the companies can't handle the traffic, so they go, okay, here's our free version, and they put it, they give it to download, they give it to Simtel, and they post it on, you know, these different web servers so that other people can help them get the product out there.
We have, we have an email from Linda. I use AOL Webmail for my business email. I've not been able to send emails for about a week now, although I can receive emails through AOL Webmail. Any suggestions on what may be wrong? So she can hasn't been able to send, but receives.
AOL uses web-based mail. It's not something where you're downloading the actual email to your computer. It's more of, you know, within their service. I would be checking with them because they're in control. They're in control of that system, and they also I believe have filters for spam and so forth. So that would be something I would be contacting AOL in terms of why you're not able to send out from their email system. Typically, if it's something with like Outlook or Outlook Express or some desktop or PC-based email, occasionally if you get some kind of Trojan or spyware or something that manages to get through and infects your system, sometimes they put an errant character in your outgoing server, or even in your ingoing, in your inbox, to get in the way, to be annoying. So you need to know what your settings are, and then go in and confirm whether or not they're right or wrong. So it's always good after you have your system set up with email systems such as Outlook, Outlook Express, or any email system, is know what your settings are. And, put them in a safe place so you can go back to it. A lot of people set up a password and then they forget it.
Yeah.
So your user account is your name or whatever it is, your email address at whatever.com or .net and so forth, and then your password. And a lot of these people have them set up to automatically, log in and use the password, and then you have problems. A year later, 6 months later, and it's like, what's the password? I don't remember. So make sure you write some of those things down, put them in a safe place.
Jenny in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just bought Adobe Premiere for some video editing.
Okay.
And for some reason, it's not working with my JVC hard drive camcorder. The files from my JVC are .mod, and Adobe keeps saying file not supported when I try to import the video file. And I guess my question is whether or not there's any efficient way to change those over to an MPEG, or if there's another program I can use to change them over.
Okay.
So what's going on is you've got your JVC camera hooked up to your computer.
Right.
And you've saved, you're moving the file from your video recorder over to your computer.
Right.
And then you're pointing the Adobe Premiere to that file, and it's not recognizing it.
Yeah, it's saying file type not supported.
Okay. Now, are there any options within Adobe Premiere to change the file type for it to look at?
No, I haven't found any yet.
Okay.
And I've gone onto their help section, and I didn't see the MODs in their supported files.
Okay. All right. What I would do, I mean, you have a situation where you've created, you have your movie file, you're bringing it over to your computer, you have software that you want to work with to manipulate it, and that software can't see it. So
right.
You have to get that file in a format that can be seen by Adobe Premiere. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is, number one, make absolutely sure Adobe Premiere cannot recognize that file by either going to Adobe's website and looking, you know, doing a search or whatever, but finding out or looking at the box, if you have a box, to see the file types that are supported. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So to rule that out. So if it doesn't support that file type, then what you need to do is you might want to go to a site like download.com and type in, you know, file converter and put in the file type that you're looking for to convert to, you know, one of the ones that, like you said, MPEG, that the Adobe Premiere supports. And there, I'm positive they'll be out there for you. And then you would have to download that software. There might be free versions, you know, for you to work with for a month, or they might be just plain out free and you not have to pay for them. And then you'll have to use that conversion program to point to that file to convert it to the file type that Premiere will look at and work with. So
okay.
And that's all you
know,
need to do.
I'll give you a perfect example. My daughter had to create a video for school. So she created the video. We brought it over to the PC, and we use Windows Movie Maker. Okay? So now we've got Windows Movie Maker. We edited the program. We did all the titles, subtitles, and all this stuff and got rid of what we didn't need. And then I said, all right, now we need to create a DVD so she can bring it to class so they can look at it. Well, Windows Movie Maker did not make the ability for you to create a DVD that you could take off of the computer and put in a video, you know, a DVD player to play on a TV. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This can't be true. But it is. You know, if you do the research online, you find out that Windows Movie Maker cannot make a DVD that's playable in a DVD player. So what did I do? I found this, like, product called Santa Claus DVD. Don't ask me why they call it Santa Claus DVD, but that was it, and I think I bought it for like $30, and it took my Windows Movie Maker file and created a DVD that I was able to burn and play on a DVD player. So it happens. Well, that's all I could say is it happens.
Man, thanks again for calling, Jenny.
Hopefully the file types at Adobe Premiere, that there's a way within the program to actually do that.
Al in Milwaukee writes that AVG has been having some trouble with false positive viruses, and they even have a user forum on the topic. Can you explain a little bit about false positives?
Well, what it's doing is it's doing a search of your system, and it's saying it's found things that are actually okay, but they're bad in their eyes. In their results, they're saying they're bad, but they're actually okay. So you know, having another program doing a scan, it'll come up with no results, which means that, you know, there's no harm, there's no issues. It's I don't know if it's AVG not being able to react quickly to dealing with the false positives, but obviously if there are user forums and they're discussing it, I'm sure it's going to get some kind of attention, hopefully fairly soon, to fix it. Because it's basically telling you there's a problem. There really isn't one.
Jane has a question for you, emailed in. Is there any use for old computer printers? I have a couple I want to get rid of. Donate or toss?
Old printers. There's a use only if you can find, you know, an alternative home. There's also places that will take them and part them out. You know,
recycle
places
them.
Recycle them. places like Parts Now and others. Actually, Madison's kind of like a hotbed of places that I almost call them chop shops for printers, laser printers, inkjet printers. They take them apart. They recycle the plastic. They shred the plastic. Some of the pieces are valuable, you know, in being reused in other, you know, repair places that they may sell to. I wouldn't expect a lot of value for them, but, you know, if you look...
it's nice to have them recycled.
Yeah, probably under printer wholesalers. I don't even know, you know, I haven't even looked in the phone book to see where those guys would be listed, but they're in Madison. Yeah. There are a number of them.
And they're probably elsewhere
and then
as well.
Cascade Management, you know, I think is a computer recycler. They would help too.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look now at computers and computer software with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. And Pete, you have a top 10 list for us again, I bet, today. And what have you got for us?
Well, I got some interesting ones. They're always interesting, amazes me, all the stuff that's out there. If you go to InfoStar.com and go to the top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date, or if you click on current, you'll get the same list. This first one, it's called FindAGrave.com.
Oh.
Just about anything to do with finding a grave, including the ability to search through 28-plus million grave records.
Oh, man.
And also to look at graves from thousands of famous people around the world. Interesting, you know, site for that stuff. This next one is owned and operated by WebMD, and it's called MedicineNet.com. And it's they're a healthcare media publishing company, and this is a searchable resource on all medical stuff that's to help inform us as consumers. The next one, number three, is the ability to search among 3,500 publications in one place with access to 60-plus million articles. There's a free trial for it, but the company is called High Beam Research, and it's highbeam.com. This next one, if you're looking for vacation rentals, I've had these resources out there before. Here's another one. It's called and appropriately named. You can search over 118,000 vacation rentals from around the world. It's called homeaway.com. One I mentioned earlier in the show, it's a web buyer's guide resource for technology products. Search among details on over 40,000 technology products. They call it for enterprise, but, you know, if you're looking for anything related to computers, this is another resource to go to. It's called webbuyersguide.com. This next one, you know, I've been watching all the sports, Larry, just like a lot of us do. Not everyone, but a lot of us, you know, NFL, NBA, National Hockey League. And I never paid attention, but they'd always bring up, you know, all these stats, you know, all this information. Well, you know, there's a bureau out there that keeps track of it, and it's called Ilias Sports Bureau, and it was founded in 1913, and their website is esb.com, and they are the official statistician for those major leagues I mentioned. The next one, you know, with all the things going on with the stock market, here's another resource for news, opinion, and analysis, so it might be a little easier to get, you know, some current news information rather than going to larger sites. It's called SeekingAlpha.com. And if you're putting up a website, here's a resource to help you find a host. It's called HostFinders.com. And here's a company that their main goal is to create programs and utilities that allow you to work with your computer but faster. And it's called XTEQ.com, and some of their programs are for free, so it's worth checking out. And, you know, they always talk about inflation, Larry.
Yes.
Well, there's got to be a resource on inflation data, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back
for
charting all that stuff, well, it's called inflationdata.com, and anything and everything you wanted to know about inflation, And I posted today's current inflation rate is 3.66%.
Okay. And there you have it. And just go to InfoStar.com to take a look at those. If you didn't get it written down, which you probably didn't, just go to InfoStar.com and you'll see the top 10 lists from today and all the way back for a long time.
Very long time.
Very long time. Jay in Milton is up next. Jay, hello to you.
Hey, you guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I got to try to make this quick. My phone's going to die on me here. But I just had a problem with Antivirus Pro 2009. If you're familiar with this at all.
I have not heard of that one. But
you
haven't? What kind of problem?
Okay. I have a laptop. I do not have the McAfee, the year-long McAfee ran out about 6 months ago, so I do not have any antivirus on my laptop.
Okay.
And for some reason now, let's say about 2 weeks ago, my computer got infected with this program called Antivirus Pro 2009, which is clearly a virus program.
Okay.
And it's kind of taken over my whole system, and just doing a couple of Google searches for that to try to figure out how to remove this. I'm kind of at a standstill because if I download any of these free antivirus programs, apparently this Antivirus Pro 2009
is trying to block it.
Yeah, it completely blocks it. Even if I rename the file, I don't know what I'm doing. And now this computer is just
All right. What operating system are you using?
It's Windows XP.
Okay. You probably or hopefully have the restore mode.
Have
you tried using...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Have you tried doing a restore on your system?
Yeah, I tried doing a restore for a date, obviously, earlier before this happened, and it does not allow me to go back any further from when this was first infected onto my computer.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, a couple of things that you can try. One is if you go to my website, infostar.com, and then click on the Virus Info Center page,
sure.
There's links to what I call, they're called virus searches, and I have about six or seven that you can click to.
Okay.
And do specific searches on the Anti-Pro 2000 or AV Pro 2000 or whatever it is, and see if you can find any results in those searches.
Okay.
And there might be some specific tools that you may be able to download from that.
Sure.
The other thing is you should download the programs to a CD, like AVG or ClamWin or some Bitdefender, and disconnect your computer and bring it up in the safe mode. I don't know if you've ever done that before.
I've tried it once before, but
what you do is you hit the F8 key, you reboot your computer, and right around when it says starting Windows, you should be hitting the F8 key. So you might want to do it a little before, and it's okay if you hit it, three, four, five, six times.
Sure.
And then bring it up in the safe mode. It'll give you a little warning about there's a problem with your display, because it's not may not be as high res as what you're used to, and then install the antivirus programs and run them even off of the network without the updates, and see if it'll do a scan to get rid of it.
Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. So that makes sense.
Those are some of the things that I would try right away, and then also I don't know if you tried going into Google and searching the groups within Google for that particular program that you says has infected your system, to see if you can try and find some additional help that way too.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Peggy in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Peggy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Sure.
I have a problem I hope you can help with. We have a piece of older software. It's called Vectorworks. It's a CAD program. And it's been running on my husband's laptop, which runs Windows XP Home Edition.
Okay.
We've had it for several years. And all of a sudden, we went to open it last week. It wouldn't open. The program comes up with a runtime error. It's like the program opens, but then it immediately quits.
Okay.
And trying to figure out, I'm assuming it's something that's happened to the computer between last time we opened it and now that would caused this to stop working.
Okay. So how long has this been since you haven't been able to use it?
It was a couple weeks ago that we tried, and I've tried a few things since then. Before that, we had used it about a month ago, like we used it in October. Sometime.
Have you tried doing a restore on your system?
Well, I tried doing a restore, and the restore didn't work. I picked several different dates, and none of them worked.
Mm-hmm.
The things we wondered about, Service Pack 3 was installed. That was something, so we deleted that, and it still didn't work. And I wondered about Adobe updates or virus updates.
Mm-hmm.
I also tried getting one of these registry mechanic, you know, one of those programs.
Right.
Restore the registry, and that didn't work either.
And there's no update to Vectorworks? Is it something that's just...
Well, there's a lot. It's an old program.
Right.
And there's a lot of updates, but it costs like $2,000, and we just have one. We just have our house plans on there that we want to print out.
Right.
So I think it's because it's so old. I mean, I assume that's it, and that one of these newer things maybe conflicts with it.
Yeah. So, in other words, there's no way for you to, like, install it on another system. It's kind of locked on this system?
We've got this CD. I could install it on another system if we had another system.
Right.
But we don't.
So
I don't know if we need to, like, reinstall Windows and start over from the beginning. I don't know how big of a deal that is.
Well, if you were to reinstall Windows, depending upon how old the computer is, maybe it came with Service Pack 1 or maybe not, or maybe it came with Service Pack 2. And then, but Service Pack 3 is an accumulative. So, you know, if you downloaded Service Pack 3, it's like 350 megabytes. And then you clicked on that to install, it would bring your Windows almost current, because usually there's always something they leave out, of course. But what I would try and do is, you know, if you can do, have you done any searches with the runtime error and the name of the software?
Yeah, I have, and I found one where two people had the same problem, and I didn't find any solutions. The one guy was at a school, and he said, you know, I went back to my last year's image, and it ran fine.
Uh-huh.
And when I bring on this year's image, it doesn't run.
Uh-huh.
So, but I didn't find any solution or what exactly it was, but it sounded like it was something that some piece of software or update that they had done.
Yeah.
That it no longer ran on.
It sounds like a file got changed that for some reason there's no way, you know, you're able to get back to it, and it's an important file that this Vectorworks needs for running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried uninstalling and reinstalling the program itself, and that just...
Yeah, it sounds to me it's like one of those things where, did you say that you ran the Service Pack 3 and that's when it seemed to have stopped working?
That is one of the things we did. Just that and Adobe updates were the only things we could think of.
Yeah, I would point more to Service Pack 3 being the culprit.
And we deleted Service Pack 3.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, there's a lot of baggage there.
Right.
And, you know, they could... Well, one of the programmers could have easily have forgotten one or five or ten files, you know. I've seen that, and you can go back to if you know the file that you need to replace, there are ways to do it, to extract it and go back.
Mm.
And I don't know why Restore is not able to do it, but...
Yeah, I'm getting an error. The Restore, just each, no matter what date I pick, it says... Looks like it's going through it, then it shuts down, and it opens up, and it says it was unable to restore. No changes in the major.
I would just try and see if you can kind of do some better searches with, you know, Vectorworks, CAD, runtime error, and, you know, see if there are any other solutions out there.
Yeah. Sorry we can't be of more help on that one, but thanks, Peggy, for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from Kevin who says, regarding an earlier call, a caller with a slow DSL, I was wondering if... Peter, if you are aware of opendns.com, opendns.com. If so, I'd like to get your opinion. We had an agonizingly slow DSL connection, but the difference was like night and day after changing over to opendns.com.
Hmm. No, I'm not familiar with that at all. So changing over... I'm not quite clear on being able to change over because it's...
That's all he says. He changed over to opendns.com, and it worked.
Huh.
Can't,
I guess that's something we'll all have to kind of research for ourselves and go to the site and see what it actually does.
Yeah, I guess so. Marilyn in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have Windows XP, mm-hmm. and I subscribe to Windows OneCare, which scans for viruses, and it has a firewall and all that sort of stuff on it.
Okay.
My system is quite slow, and I'm just wondering. And recently, I've noticed that email that, and I go through AT Yahoo for email. Recently, I've noticed that there's a Norton insignia scanning the email that is coming in and going out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if that is slowing up my system. And the second part of the question is, how do I know if I have another firewall on my system? OneCare has a firewall. But how do I know if I have another firewall that came with my system that is slowing it up? I've heard you say in the past that if you have a couple of firewalls operating, that will give you a slow operating system.
That's correct. If you have firewalls on your system, there's hardware firewalls and there's software firewalls. Sometimes firewalls are found in what are called routers, you know, for distributing the internet in a business or home. And then there are software firewalls, which are on the PCs themselves. Sometimes they can be on the servers in an office environment, but they need to be set up so that they're efficient for the user. Otherwise, they will block things that you normally want to do. They'll simply get in the way, and you'll have to approve of them. Or if you don't approve of them correctly, then they'll stop working, whatever mm-hmm. you're trying to do will stop working. So how to find out if there are more firewalls? If you go to the control panel, you should be able to locate an icon for security, and there might even be an icon in there for firewalls. And also in the OneCare program, there should be some ways to streamline or control that. I'm sure it's not just like a, click on or click off. So you might have to do some research with the Microsoft OneCare to see, if there are any ways to make improvements in that. But with all the things that you mentioned, that's a lot going on. And I'm not surprised that you see things getting slower because your computer's, trying to juggle, an online service, a firewall service, an antivirus service, and there might be other things going on as well. So one of the earlier callers mentioned, things that they had in their system tray. The stuff that would be on your system to the lower right-hand corner, if you have a lot of icons there.
I do not.
Okay.
If there are a few there, I exit them.
Okay.
And so I only have maybe three or four.
Okay, so you might have like the OneCare probably is an icon.
Yes.
And so forth. So what you may have to do is some research into the OneCare to see if there are some settings that you need to change. And then the Norton might be something that's in conjunction with OneCare, or it might be something that, like you mentioned, are you using AT&T
yes.
Yahoo for the service?
Yes, I am.
It may be something that you might want to look at turning off if it's redundant that LiveCare is taken care of.
Yeah, Karen emailed and said AT&T suggests that you disable any firewall as they already have one.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, my speed improved tremendously.
See, you already.
They should
so
go to
AT&T's got a software firewall.
Yeah.
The Windows operating system has a firewall, and the OneCare's got a firewall. So.
Yeah, she said once she got rid of the other firewalls, mm-hmm. her speed improved tremendously mm-hmm. with 10 exclamation points after it. after the word.
Well, that's a timely email.
It sure is.
So it sounds like you have three potential firewalls that you need to confirm and deal with.
And thanks, Marilyn. Good luck. Bruce in Schaumburg.
I've never heard of three firewalls possibly going on at once. That's a lot.
Bruce in Schaumburg, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good.
Quick quick question. I just wanted to comment on this. I'm curious about alternative operating systems, specifically things like Linux with OpenOffice, and how those are penetrating the market, and if those are really ready for prime time for people to be using at home instead of, say, Windows or the Mac operating system. And anything you might have to offer up for people who are interested in using Linux?
Well, I Linux has been out for a number of years. The OpenOffice solution, it works. They're all downloadable. Ubuntu, Dell has put on some of their PCs that they've sold. You can download it and install it, burn it to a CD and install it on another computer. I've done that. It's fairly straightforward and easy. And, you know, the Star Office products work. The issues in the mainstream of PC buyers is that there may be products that you want to buy that may not interface with it. And, you know, this is where the research comes into play. You know, what are you buying the computer for? What are you going to do with it? And what are you going to hook up to it or potentially hook up to it? You know, things like iPods, iPhones, cell phones with personal information managers, BlackBerries, digital cameras, DVDs, you know, manipulating, like the earlier caller,
sure,
manipulating movie files, sound files, you know, downloading music. All of those things, people want them to be easy. And it's having to make that extra effort to add those features to your computer, which I think becomes a roadblock to those operating systems. So I'm not saying they don't work well. It's that these extra steps you have to take to not just put the key in the car and turn it on,
yeah,
shift it in a drive and go. That's what we're all looking for. And unless you're willing to make that extra effort, you know, to get those things tied into an alternative operating system for the user, the end user, like you and I, Larry, and
sure,
you know, that's what I think the roadblocks are. So
there you have it. And just this one final little note here, we've got a flurry of emails. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to
stay on for another day.
Yeah.
Have our marathon.
Laura from Arpin emailed just to say, I called last month when I couldn't access a website to I'd subscribe to. You suggested I download a second web browser. I followed your recommendation, and now I have full access to my favorite website again. Thanks so much for your advice.
That's great.
That's always nice,
yep,
to hear.
Yep.
Well, Pete, you won't be with us in January. You'll be
doing a little vacationing.
Doing a little vacationing, but we'll look forward to your next visit, February 2nd.
Sounds great. Happy
thanks,
holidays,
Pete,
to everybody. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Pete. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm really sorry we didn't get to everybody, but it's really impossible. It's an impossible task. Just to let you know, tomorrow, Gail Knopp Baker of Madison tells of her new book, Cancer is a Bitch, or I'd Rather Be Having a Midlife Crisis. That's the title. And at 11:45, we'll take a look at America's County Fairs. There's a book out on that as well. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.